This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Madeline Brand, continuing with our decadence theme. Tonight is a night to have some champagne, but let's face it, the bubbly can be a little, well, uninspired. How about mixing it up a little and mixing yourself a different kind of cocktail, a Satan's Whiskers or a Widow's Kiss, for example? Those were favorite drinks of past generations. In search of these forgotten libations, reporter Richard Adams recently tracked down the world's leading cocktail archaeologist and filed this report.
I visited the home of Ted Hay, also known as Dr. Cocktail. The walls of his den are lined with old records, antique glassware, and liquor cabinets custom-built to hold his collection. He's got about 1,300 bottles of rare and antique spirits, and can make pretty much any cocktail ever poured.
Here we have the American whiskey section. This bottle's from the cowboy era.
This is the stuff when the cowboy walks into the saloon and says, "Whiskey."
That's the stuff. And it probably was Old Crow, too. This one's from the, say, the 1880s, 1890s.
You're not saying this is the type of thing. This is it. That's
it. This is it. This is the very thing. This is one of my favorites. Green River Whiskey. The whiskey without regrets. I've made cocktails that were made popularly 70, 80 90 years ago with 70, 80, 90-year-old booze.
Ted and a few other cocktail historians share a unique passion, tracking down and reconstructing what people used to drink.
What we do is we comb through old books and old records, and we look at old bottles, and we read old newspaper transcripts. Just anything we can do to get to the bottom of what something meant, what something was, what impact it had, and how to do it again.
Describe the typical cocktail drinker in the early days.
Dissipated. They were your gambler types. They were the sort of people that woke up to a drink. And that's why cocktails were so scandalous back then. They were morning drinks.
Cocktails eventually caught on with the mainstream. Even Prohibition, designed to kill the cocktail, couldn't stop its spread.
You could really say the golden era of the cocktail began with Prohibition and ended with the end of World War II.
Say, how many drinks have you had?
This will make 6 martinis.
All right. Will you bring me 5 more martinis? Leo, line them right up here.
Yes, ma'am.
The high point of Ted's cocktail journey came with one drink in particular, the Corpse Reviver No. 2. He found it in an old beat-up bartender's guide from 1934.
It really galvanized me when I had my first Corpse Reviver No. 2, having looked for at least one of the ingredients for years. And when I finally found it, I was expecting an interesting drink. I wasn't expecting something that was about the best thing I'd ever tasted. And that's what I got.
Let's make a Corpse Reviver No. 2.
Now I'm going for the Lillet. And then the final coup de grace, the very American Herb Saint. It's a very good pastis, which is what we call an absinthe substitute. Just dribbling a little bit in so it doesn't take over the drink, because these anise-flavored liqueurs really take over a drink. As the Americans used to say, here's hell. Yes, this is it. I can taste every individual thing in this drink. I taste the gin. I taste the Cointreau, which is an orange liqueur. I taste the Lillet with this delicate wine character. And then after you swallow, you just get this haunting sense of the anise.
And for Ted, the study of this liquor goes deeper. When he opens a really old bottle, part of his mind salutes the distiller who made it generations ago.
Once they're in bottles, they're inert. They stay good forever, unless something makes them go bad. They stay good forever. So something, that man's effort, once it's in the bottle, is potential energy. It is the potential of someone enjoying it, of a social experience. It's been bottled up
like a time capsule for all that time, and that man, long dead, I am able to taste what he did this 100 years later. It's a metaphysical experience to me.
For Day to Day, this is Richard Adams.